Cotton Street. And then in addition to those rooms, we also operate 40 apartments throughout Shreveport and Bossier City. And so when people transition from the shelter, the goal is to get them back into permanent housing, back into mainstream community. And I can tell you today, year to date, from January 1st to January 19th, we've had 95 phone calls from families looking for shelter. So those numbers are startling to us. And so while the poverty rate, you know, we may have fewer, there is still a poverty and homeless issue in Shreveport and in Louisiana and Caddo and Bossier parishes.
Now, you mentioned families. I understand that Providence House serves primarily families, women with children.
Actually, it can be single men with children, families with children, or single women with children. And that is what's unique about Providence House. We take the whole family, and our holistic approach to ending homelessness, you have to deal with the issues that the children are facing, that the parents are facing, and you have to keep that family unit, we believe, together in order to really break the homeless cycle.
Okay. And when and the way you define families, in terms of male and female, is it required that they be legally married?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was a sticking point. We are teaching our children how to... we're not pushing our values onto our children, but what we are saying to our children is it is unacceptable if for a male and a female, they can love one another, but in our shelter, we require that people be married.
I see. Now, Pastor Larry, what's the population that the rescue mission cares for? How might that be different than what the Providence House population is?
Right now, what we're seeing is we're seeing we have an essence of 110 men between our McNeil Street and TLC that's in our shelter, and we're at about 40 women, and I think last count just a little while ago we got 25 kids, so we're looking at around 160 or so that are living in our facility, 150 to 160 living in our facility, men, women, and children. Which the women's side separated from the men's side. And we also have family suites where we have women with children living in our family suites.
But now the rescue mission accepts single men and single women as well?
They do, yes.
Okay.
We've got multiple levels to our program. And it was the guest program, which is just really a fancy name for a 90-day emergency shelter. And we got people in the work program, which have a full-time job looking for they're saving their money up so they can get housing. We got people that's in our housing program, and that could be because mental or physical ailments. They can't work, so we're helping them navigate the waters of benefits and get, low-income housing.
Yes. I see. So then the housing that is offered with your organization, is it more of a short-term basis than, let's say, for the Providence House? Is it a different type of scenario? Is it more emergency shelter, or is there a long-term component?
No, we look at everything just like the Providence House, and like you said earlier, in a holistic view to help the whole person, with our clinics and everything, our dental and doctor's clinics. And it's individually case-worked, what happened to get you homeless, what is going to take to get you unhomeless, and what is it going to take to sustain you unhomeless. So we have time frames on how long we'd like for you to take to get a job and things like that, but we also have our discipleship program, which is a 9-month program that ladies and men are going through, and then they out of that. So it could be, a month, it could be a week, it could be all the way up to a year. It really depends on the individual.
And I know both of your organizations have some very interesting programs that you offer to the people, to the populations that you serve. And I definitely want to touch on those in a few minutes. I want to bring Dr. Wissing into the conversation because, Dr. Wissing, now you were the immediate past president of the Martin Luther King Health Clinic here in Shreveport. Is that correct?
Yep.
It's not a shelter, but it provides some essential healthcare services to this population as well as the impoverished population, I understand. Can you talk a little bit more specifically as to what those services are?
Mm-hmm. Well, MIK, this is our 30th year. We're the oldest free pharmacy and clinic in the state of Louisiana, and we service about 3,000 patients a year. In 2016, we dispensed about 30, 35,000 free prescriptions. And a large list of volunteers. It's a comprehensive approach. It's not just the medical clinic that take care of these patients, but we offer a garden. We offer free vegetables and fruits. And we offer yoga. We offer diabetic education, a variety of volunteers. But the clinics include diabetic clinic, where we're a nationally certified diabetic clinic, respiratory, cardiac, geriatrics, and general medicine. And what's unique about MLK is about 94% of our patients show up. So we have a remarkable show-up rate in our patients, which is unheard of in most clinics and hospital
settings. How do they get there?
They get there by bus. Often they bring each other. But believe it or not, transportation has not been an issue because we see them showing up. But
is that true for the homeless as well as for the impoverished?
Yeah, that's another story. Now, MLK primarily takes care of uninsured and underinsured, but our homeless population is being fed through a combination of work with Hope Connection and St. Luke's mobile medical ministry. We have a clinic on Thursdays at Hope Connection where we see homeless, and if they have chronic illness or need immediate care, or not immediate, but care, we drive them to MLK, refer them to Martin Luther King, or they'll get there on their own, or we give them bus tickets.
I see.
Things like that.
So the homeless in many cases are being transported to the
MLK,
facility.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
and
great.
They're being picked up at Hope Connections through the St. Luke's van, taken to MLK.
Okay. And what sort of barriers do you find to people accessing health care, particularly with the homeless population?
Obviously, just transportation, getting to point A to B.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness of these services. There's a certain percentage of homeless that are very skeptical or frightened or whatever word I'm missing here that may not want to seek formal care in a clinic setting. So, and I think Hope Connection has an outreach outreach service where they go to the homeless where they're at. But I have found once we get them in MLK, they're very appreciative,
mm-hmm.
and we've had some really good success stories.
Now, you mentioned that you dispense prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
the actual medication or the writing of the paper prescription?
Oh, no, we have five or six physician volunteers. Right, they see the patient. They get their prescription, and they get it filled. They will leave our facility with a full bag of prescriptions.
And how are those prescriptions paid for?
Our budget last year, we dispensed about a little over $2 million worth of prescription drugs. MLK probably spent a little under $50,000 for that. The rest is a drug company assistance programs, donations, and grants, and things like that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because as a physician myself, I find it very challenging when treating patients and prescribing medications and only discover that they can't afford the medications and so they're not compliant. But many times they won't tell you that.
They won't, but our patients leave with a full set of whatever drugs. They may leave with 10, 15 drugs and 3 months' supplies because
mm-hmm.
we rotate them back every 3 months. So my asthma patients will leave 3 months of Advair and whatever else they need. It's a wonderful program.
That's great. Pastor Larry, what sort of health issues do you encounter in the population that you serve? What sort of things do you see when the homeless folks come in that they suffer with?
We see a lot of the same things that everybody else does, but just a lack of going to either a clinic or a doctor's office in the past, letting things ride for a long time. We actually have a clinic in our facility where we have doctors and nurses and dentists. And right now, matter of fact, as we speak right now, there's a clinic going on at the mission where we have a doctor and nurses in seeing our patients. We'll have two dentists in this week doing dental stuff. We got a chiropractor that comes in on Friday and works on people. But under, you know, not seeing people. It's like the doc said, a lot, they're really leery sometimes of or they don't think that nobody cares, or mm-hmm. they haven't been able to afford or see things, so they've just kind of given up, you yeah. know, on I'm just going to have to deal with it or this or that. And so they're really, really appreciative after you show them that you really care
yeah.
and that there is help for them.
What about exposure to the elements, exposure to cold weather, heat? Let's say you mentioned dental or perhaps poor foot care, foot hygiene,
yes.
You know, diabetic complications or skin or from not having good footwear. Are these common things that
it
you encounter?
It is very common, and we deal a lot with that. And so, of course, we have a lot of donation bins, and so we're always providing them with new socks and new boots and new shoes. And we've been blessed with NSU students coming in and doing their clinicals and stuff there, and the nursing students in the spring and the fall. And so they do foot-to-toe, foot-to-head, mm-hmm. You know, and talk to them about, and they're doing classes with them, and we're also teaching them hygiene and things like that, which is very critical.
I see. And what about psychiatric illnesses? Do you have many people coming in with mental illness?
We do, and the biggest thing we see is when they usually get to us, or I would imagine at the Providence House, they would see the same thing. When they get to us, they've been off their medication for a while because they would have a prescription written, and for whatever means, wherever they was at, it would run out, you know, and they wouldn't get it filled.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they come in, once we get to a certain level, we got several organizations that we work with. Once, you know, it depends on what their diagnosis is and what type of medications, whether we refer them to another organization or not.
Okay. And what about they come in with addictions, drug addictions, alcohol addictions? How commonly do you see that?
That is very common in the world that we operate in. I just spoke to an organization today, and what we see is, I've been reading a lot of articles, and then what we deal with is addictions cause homelessness.
Yeah.
So a person gets addicted, and they wind up losing everything, losing their family. But we also found that homelessness causes addictions.
Sure.
So there's people that become homeless because of what other reasons. And then when they're in that community and they have low self-esteem, before long they start using drugs or alcohol to cope with the depression.
Yeah.
And so it's like a double-edged sword.
Right. Yeah. And the depression, I understand, can cause homelessness, and homelessness can cause depression.
That's
as
correct.
Well. Yeah. What do you find are some of the other and Ms. Howard, please join in our conversation, certainly. What are the other causes of homelessness that you encounter?
I think what we see a lot at Providence House is domestic violence.
Yes.
Divorce. The inability to find a job that pays a living wage.
Yes.
Those are the top three. 80% of the women who are at Providence House have experienced some level of domestic violence. And when you have a woman who's been abused, or over a period of time, and the husband has been the caregiver and the breadwinner, if you will, and that woman has to figure out how to take care of herself and her children, there's nowhere to go. And oftentimes, families don't realize the abuse has been going on. So a woman is less likely to tell anyone for fear of feeling embarrassed or ashamed. And so they will live in their cars. They will live at friends' homes before they will finally make it to Providence House, because that's when they realize, hey, I need better for my kids. And kind of going back to the topic of health, I am amazed that families are more willing to take care of their children. They will get care for their kids. They will make sure that their kids have dental work before they take care of themselves. And so we find that a lot of people have hypertension, diabetes, that have been untreated for years and years and years. And so when you get to Providence House, our job is to figure out not only what led you to homelessness, but we have to peel back the onion to figure out what are all the other things that we need to deal with. But in terms of, you know, what leads to homelessness, so many factors. We had a young woman, very well educated, went to private school here in Shreveport, went to a private college, reputable family, met the man of her dreams while she was in college. He just happened to be a convicted felon and led her down a path of no return. And so we see this very bright young woman with a promising future reduced to, you know, lack of self-confidence. And she arrives to us with three kids, and our job is to help to make her whole again. And so domestic violence is a vicious, silent catalyst for homelessness.
Yes, I would deeply agree to that too. And we, in our classes and stuff like that, that's some of the greatest things on the women's side that we deal with is domestic abuse, PTSD, and those type things.
What about teenage pregnancy and a lack of education? Does that factor in?
We don't see a lot of teenage pregnancy at Providence House. Surprisingly, the information that young people receive very early on, it's starting even in the middle schools around teen pregnancy prevention, I see that really working. So we don't see a lot of teenage pregnancy at Providence House. We know that it's out there, but we just don't experience a lot of it.
We primarily see, I know on both of us, a lot of young ladies. Mm-hmm. We have a young lady in our facility right now that is very young and didn't even know how to take care of her kid. I was going to say earlier when we was talking about the different things that causes homelessness, one of them that I've been doing a little reading on is a minimum wage. Mm-hmm. We don't really realize, a lot of us, that when minimum wage was originally started, and then I think in 1968 was the last time, and it started on a downward spiral, that a person on minimum wage could sustain a household of two, and two people could sustain a household of three to four. And nowadays what we see is for a family of four, husband and wife have to just about work two minimum wage jobs. And so if they lose one minimum wage job, and especially a mother with kids, she's got two kids, and she loses one of her minimum wage jobs, she's homeless.
Yeah, I can see that.
I would encourage anyone who's not seen the Alice report to mm-hmm. pick it up. It is information that has been compiled from USDA, HUD, IRS, all the reporting bodies into one report. And there were 11 United Ways across the country that got together to put together this Alice report. So when you're talking about minimum wage and the lack thereof, for a single person, minimum wage is a little bit over $11,000. That's poverty, not minimum wage, I'm sorry, poverty level. Mm-hmm. And so when you're talking about a family of four, you know, that number goes up. But the poverty level and really what it costs to just have the basic needs for a single person, you need to earn a little bit over $14,000. And so that's a job that's about $9 an hour. But for a family of four to have decent housing, child care, transportation, et cetera, that number is closer to $44,000. So when you think about minimum wage and what it really costs to live and what's called a survival budget, there is a great disparity. So that's why you have so many people working, you know, once upon a time, two jobs would do it, but people are working three jobs. Yeah. And then what do you do with your children?
Sure.
So you have, you know, older kids taking care of younger kids, and it creates the problems that we're seeing throughout our city.
Yeah, I understand that there's so many things that push people into poverty and into homelessness, and that you know, there's no one thing. There's so many factors, and that people's needs may be different depending on their circumstances, and that, you know, you encounter somebody with these difficulties and that it really requires an in-depth assessment of what their individual difficulties are, what their strengths are, what their needs are, and then coordinating with the various services available. And I understand there's actually quite a number of organizations here in town, and we couldn't have everyone represented here this evening, but I was particularly interested in how they're coordinated. And I do have Krista Pazaglia. I hope I did a better job that time. Krista Pazaglia. How's that? Krista Pazaglia on the phone. I look forward to asking this question of her. Let's get her on. Hello, Krista? Krista? Is she there? Krista? Welcome to Health Matters. Krista is not with us. Okay, well, Krista will have to come back. I think we may have lost her. But Dennis, you, Dr. Whistling, you mentioned Hope Connections, of which Krista is the director of that organization. What's your... Let's try again. Hello, Krista? Krista? She's not here. Could you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned Hope Connections, what exactly that organization does?
Well, I'm a volunteer there, and by the way, Krista does an excellent job. It's basically a daycare for the homeless, and where homeless individuals can come and get their mail, check the internet, do wash and dryer, take a shower. They're fed a meal in the evening by a volunteer church in town. And so it's basically a clearinghouse where their staff is their focus is to get them housed, which is their primary feelings about caring for the homeless now is get them in a house. Get them, you know, sheltered, and then address the other problem. So Hope Connection focuses on getting them housing, and they got a whole team of LPCs and whatnot that handle that, along with an outreach in the community where they go to the homeless and deal with their issues.
Gotcha. And then how do they collaborate? I understand there's like a lot of separate organizations.
A number of organizations, and if we get Krista on the phone, she can probably address that better
She's calling back now.
Yeah, and she has a really good thumbprint on that the services here offered in Caddo.
Okay. Well, we also have a call from a Peyton from Shreveport. He may have a question. We'll get him on the line. Peyton?
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you so much. What a great topic, and I really want to congratulate your guests on the wonderful contributions that they're making to the community. Just tremendous work, it sounds like they're doing. So I travel quite a bit, and, you know, oftentimes I travel with my children, and sometimes, you know, we'll come across people who appear to be homeless, and they may ask for money in certain situations. Sometimes they're performing services. They may be playing music. They may be dancing in the street. Or they may just be sitting, you know, under a cover with a little something that you can put money in. Or sometimes people randomly walk up to you and ask you for money. So it seems like there are, like, several categories of begging, if you will, or panhandling that I encounter when I travel with my kids. And I always want to sort of teach my children a lesson whenever we encounter these situations. And I didn't want to you know, let the guys know what I do with my children, but what would they tell their children in terms of how do you approach homeless individuals when you are, you know, out in the community or perhaps when you're traveling? Because you know, we don't have a lot of homelessness here. It's not, you know, something that we see out in the public frequently. But, you know, when you travel to major cities, it's something that people will encounter with some frequency. So thank you so much for taking my call, and I look forward to the feedback.
Thank you for calling in, Peyton.
Peyton, I'm sorry. I think it is incredible that you are teaching your children that we really are our brother's keeper. I think that's a very important concept, and we do the same with our children. One of, as a, you know, proponent of families and people who are considered the least of these, one of the things that I always think about and share with my kids, you want to make sure that when you are sharing resources, no matter if those resources include your time, your talent, or your treasure, that you are making a difference and you are doing good. And sometimes the best way to serve is to make sure that your gifts really help those that they're intended to help, and that, you know, that they're used for the purpose in which you are giving. And so I would always encourage you, even if you're in a major city or somewhere and you feel the heart to give, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I think our resources are often best used when given to those agencies that provide comprehensive services. So it's really, instead of giving a man a fish, you're teaching them how to fish. And I think those resources are better served that way.
I would say the same thing. Any major city that you're in, anywhere, there's going to be homeless shelters. There's going to be all kind of resources and stuff. If you're not in an area that you're familiar with, of course, nowadays with a smartphone, you can Google it and find out. We like at times we do see that sometimes when we do things like that, we actually wind up enabling a person where they're at. And we know that we don't want them to stay where they're at. And so if they will come to the facilities that are offered where they can get help, they will come out of the lifestyle that they're living in and actually be able to get help. So in the long run, that is better for the individual than actually helping them when they're panhandling on the street and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Cass, there's a small percentage of those panhandlers that are doing it for a living. I mean, that's how they get daily income, and they give the image of they're homeless when they're really not. So I agree with both of these that you can't enable that.
Yeah.
And I know as a fact that several ladies in the Walmart area over on Shreveport Barksdale does it daily, and give the impression they're homeless when they're not. So, but giving them information where the resources are at, and giving your money to agencies, I certainly agree with that.
Yeah,
the way to do it.
I think we have Krista back. We're gonna try again. Krista.
Welcome. Yes.
Oh, fantastic! Welcome to Health Matters. Sorry, I think we had some technical difficulties.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you for having me.
So please join in on the conversation. You are the executive director of Hope Connections. And
yes.
You and I spoke earlier today, and you were explaining to me kind of how Hope Connections coordinates care between a number of organizations here in town. Can you expand on that a little bit for our listeners?
Sure. Hope is the kind of the front door to the homeless system and the convener of the other agencies to work together, and we manage the HUD money that comes into this region that funds a lot of different housing programs, supportive housing programs, and including Providence House and Volunteers of America and community support programs and lots of other places, and they do an amazing job at housing. So what we do at the One Stop is provide office space where people can co-locate, agencies can co-locate. We provide day shelter services, and we provide the assessment that guides what type of housing will best meet the need of any given person. Since I heard you say that every situation is different and that we, you know, need to coordinate better in order to help people in the most accurate way. I think that's been our kind of issue in the past, was just helping whoever showed up at our door, whether or not they needed our specific help or not. We're not in this work by accident, and we do it because we want to help somebody. And sometimes people come to our door who don't need our program. They need a different something or nothing. And so so we try to gauge what agency would best meet the needs of any given situation.
And where is your agency located?
Hope Connections is on Levy Street between near Herbie Caves and LSU Med Center. LSU.
And what hours are you? Is your facility open?
We're open from 8 to 5.
Okay, and it's Monday through Friday.
Monday through Thursday, and 8 to 3 on Friday. And Christian Service is actually under construction to move the soup kitchen here on the property with us. That'll be completed before June. So we'll have a more comprehensive array of services as the soup kitchen will be here, which we're really excited about.
And could you list the organizations that you work with?
Oh, well, Hope is the Homeless Coalition, so we have about 40 agency members. But 12 agencies provide services in the building. VOA, the VA Med Center, St. Luke's Mobile Medical, MLK Health Center, Goodwill Industries, all kinds of people provide services. Nova's Heart provides services for the pets of clients who live outside. And what we try to do is really create opportunities for collaboration.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in. It's really very it's hard.
Can I comment on the panhandling?
Oh yes, please do.
Do you mind? Panhandling is illegal in our community as well as many other communities, and so when we engage panhandlers and give money to them, we're actually setting them up for arrest and we're actually harming them. There's a statistic that 60% of panhandlers are not homeless. I think Dr. Wissing said that many panhandlers are not homeless, but I think the statistic says nationally 60%. And so I'd like us to really think about, like Farnie said, how we use our money and when our money's not useful to someone, and that just because something makes us feel good in the minute does not mean it's good for that person or that it's good for the community. And those are hard questions to ask yourself when you're in that situation, even for us. I mean, people ask us for money all the time. And so I think it's a difficult situation for people to be in, to be asked for money and not give it, because you feel like your generosity is being tested in a sense. But actually, you're harming the person. And so I hope that word is some. I wish we could train the whole country to do that, and people didn't have to use that as a money making.
Chris, I'll share with you an experience that I had. As I'm a cancer doctor, and I was treating a gentleman for cancer who was homeless, and he lived near a bridge, but we tried to get him into a motel, had some nonprofit money for him, but he couldn't bring his dog into the hotel, and he had a generator that he locked up and hid every night, and he had some possessions that he hid every night, and so he didn't want to go into a more appropriate housing for that reason. So he was compliant. He came for treatment every day, but he needed to panhandle to get the bus fare to come. He didn't want to. We tried to give him vouchers. It wasn't successful. He couldn't hold on to them. If we had money, he might lose the money, or it might be taken from him. So on a day-to-day basis, he would just try to panhandle enough money to take the bus to get back and forth. And he was usually successful. His biggest obstacle was the police, because they would pick him up and take him to jail, and they'd keep him there for a number of days. And during that time, he wasn't getting his cancer treatment. So I actually had to write him a doctor's note to the police saying, well, you know, if he can't panhandle, then you please transport him back and forth to his cancer treatment. Or if you're going to put him in jail, please bring him back and forth. And it was a real challenge, and it gave me an appreciation for how difficult not having a stable home and access to transportation is for somebody to get treatment. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this show. I'm curious.
And that speaks to our solutions to homelessness. So if the only solution we offer him is one type of housing where he has to leave his family, because that animal was probably his family.
Yeah.
He considered that his family. Well, he's not going to leave that animal. Right. Well, as providers, we need to open our minds and figure out another way to provide housing for him where he can have that security with him.
Yeah.
So it comes down to the root causes of what wasn't he told about possible housing, and what options could have been made available.
Hmm. I see.
We have to change our, it's us. We're the problem.
Yeah.
We have to change the way we provide services that answer the issues that are affecting clients, instead of expecting them to mold themselves into, outdated program models that we ourselves couldn't even live in.
Yeah. Dr. Wissing, did you want to?
Question for you, Krista. One comment as a volunteer at Hope Connection, I'm a compliment on your staff's compassion and effectiveness of what they do. They do an outstanding job.
Oh, thank you.
I have noticed in the last 6-7 months been more and more care of animals. And is there an expansion into that service for your clients with animals? Are you providing dog food, that kind of stuff?
Nova's Heart is the agency that provides dog food and care for those animals. And yes, we're just seeing it more. I think clients used to leave animals tied up in the woods wherever their camps were, and now since we've become animal friendly, they are able to bring those animals with them, which means we can get the animals shots, we can get them spayed and neutered, not us, Nova's Heart, and get them the proper food and water and make sure that they're cared for properly. So seeing the increase has to do with us allowing them to be present with their animal.
Krista, I want to thank you very much for calling in and for all the good work that you and your organization do. I hope that people now are more aware of this service, and that perhaps you'll find yourself with more people wanting to support the organization.
And I want to thank the other agencies that are on the radio, because they do excellent work and we're proud to work with them.
Absolutely. We're gonna move on. I'm gonna let you go, and we're gonna move on. We have actually another guest on hold, and again, thank you very much for calling in, and good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, Krista.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ellen White?
It is Ellen White.
Hi, this is Dr. Katz. Welcome to Health Matters. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me. I sure appreciate it.
So now you are the director, I understand, of the Interfaith Pharmacy?
I'm the interim executive director, yes, at the Northwest Louisiana Interfaith Pharmacy.
Fantastic. Can you tell our listeners what your organization does and the services it provides?
Sure. We are essentially a pharmacy safety net. So we are set up to help those who have no insurance or who at any given period or place and time cannot afford their medications. And we have a couple of different programs that we utilize. We do work with Hope Connections. We've worked with St. Luke's Mobile Medical. We have worked with the Rescue Mission. A lot of partnerships within the city. But we have a chronic disease management program, we have a shelter program, and we have what we call a one-time-only program, which helps people who are trying to get out of emergency rooms and they can't afford the medications that are being prescribed.
I see. And where is your facility located?
We are at 909 Olive Street in between Line and Fairfield.
Okay. And what hours and days are you open?
We are open Mondays through Thursdays from 8 until 4.
Fantastic. And how many people do you serve?
That number can vary with the emergency room part of it, mm-hmm. But I would say on average we're talking about 400, 500 clients. And again, certain times of the year are busier than others. We have a core group of clients who comes to see us every month for their medication refill.
Very good. And where do you get your funding?
We get our funding from grants and from individual donors.
Fantastic. And everyone else here, the Providence House, mm-hmm. the Rescue Mission, MLK, where does the funding come from?
Our funding, we do get some funding from HUD, but the majority of our funding comes from private foundations and donors, private donors.
Okay. Ours comes just straight from donors and private type foundations.
Donors and grants,
yeah.
No federal or state money.
Yes. Okay, and if people want to get involved in volunteer services, are those opportunities available?
Absolutely. We can't do what we do without the help of volunteers. As you can imagine, with 236 residents and 158 of them being kids, we're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so the work that we do, the crafts with children when they're out of school, activities, Christmas time is our busiest season. We cannot do what we do without the help of volunteers. So if someone's interested in volunteering, they can go to our website, which is www.theprovidencehouse.com, or they can call us directly at 318-221-7887, and we'll be happy to help them. We have lots of church groups and school groups that come and volunteer throughout the year, so we would be happy to have a new slate of volunteers.
Fantastic.
And I would say the same. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, at the pharmacy, we're predominantly volunteer-run. We have 4 employees total, 3 of which are part-time. The rest of the operations and any kind of duties and tasks are taken care of by an amazing group of volunteers. But we're always looking for more. So we encourage people to call us, and we'll get you in and see what we can do. And it doesn't require a lot of time, but you can really have a huge impact.
And Dennis?
We had about, in MLK, we had about 5,000 volunteer hours last year.
Yeah. And I understand that the MLK Health Center was actually started by a resident.
Dr. Robert Jackson, and while he was a resident, with Sister Margaret down on Sprague Street on Saturdays, would come in the soup kitchen and start seeing patients, and he's been doing it since.
And do you have residents who are involved?
Occasionally, we do. We occasionally have residents come and participate.
That's fantastic. So in the last few minutes that we have, I'd like to discuss some of the specific programs that both Providence House and the Rescue Mission offer in terms of helping folks, not just with their immediate problem of homelessness, but with some of the other life skills, development needs that they have, vocational training, life coaching, money management, things to help get them out of that homelessness cycle. I understand that you have some specific programs at the Rescue Mission.
That's correct.
Dr. Larry, could you touch on those for a moment?
Yes, we call everything we do at the Rescue Mission under our Life Recovery Program, and it consists of our guest program, which is a emergency shelter type where a person can come in without a job, look for a job, get a job. Once they get a full-time job, during that process, they're going to classes, they're learning. We've got all kind of what we call victory classes, which dealing with addictions and anger management and PTSD and domestic abuse and different classes like that. And then once they get a job, we move them into the work program, which is a full-time job. And then they start saving their money. And so we're teaching them how to do budgets and helping them set up budgets and so forth. And working with that. And then, like I said earlier, we have the housing program, and that is helping people that either with mental or physical addictions or afflictions. And so we're helping them with budgeting, how to learn how to live off a fixed income. And then, of course, we have our discipleship program, which is a 9-month program. And during that time, they're going through the Genesis process and all kind of different classes that we have. And through that, we teach vocational training everywhere. If you walk in our kitchen, they have chef jackets on. They're learning culinary arts. They're getting forklift certifications at our distribution center. When you walk in the front door at the mission, the lady that greets you at the reception desk is a guest that's in a vocational training. We got them in our maintenance. We got them in our housekeeping, all the different aspects. One thing we learned is that if we pointed a person, of course, toward Christ, and then we helped them with their homelessness and their mental or medical issues, but if we didn't help them with their work ethics and the work skills, that they might return again. So we really push a lot on the vocational training. And then we have our clinic where we help with the medical side, helping them with their different medical issues. So as we talked about, I mean, we look at the way we do things is in a holistic view that we take care of the whole person while they're there.
And how long can someone stay at the shelter?
It's individualized. Everybody sees life coaches while they're there. They get their own case management. I don't know. I mean, as we talked about earlier, the different people, we've got a gentleman there that's there right now that it was a computer programmer, and through some bad things that happened in his life, he wound up homeless, went to jail and wound up homeless. It's going to take him a lot longer to get a job.
Yeah, because of the criminal history.
Because of his criminal history, a woman, maybe a lady that's got three kids, she's got to really get a good job, and we got to do some good training with her. So it's individually, because it's what caused a person to become homeless is individual. So you can't just throw a blanket out there on it. Mm-hmm. We do have some time frames and things that we push, and they see a life coach every 2 weeks. We just say that we want to see action steps.
Yeah.
As long as we see action steps. So it could be walking in the front door just in the guest program, work program. You might be there 6 months. You go through the discipleship program or in the housing program, and you could be there for a year to a year and a half. It's just our ultimate goal is when they walk out the door that they don't come back again. And that means that we love them.
Yeah.
They come back and volunteer, of course.
Now, during that time, there's after-school activities or educational opportunities for their children or child care?
That's exactly right. Every night, there's different organizations coming in. Like, we all live off of volunteers, mm-hmm. and the different organizations coming in, working with their kids. I when I left earlier, I snapped a picture of one of our ladies that is a part-time, and she's also a school teacher, and she was doing some after-school teaching with one of the kids that was struggling in that area.
That's excellent. And Ms. Howard, what about at the Providence House? I know there's a lot of programs that you're proud of there. Could you mention some of them?
Sure. I think education is the one tool that we know will break the cycle of homelessness. So Providence House is kind of built on these three strong pillars. It's education, supportive services, and permanent housing. And so we have the only child development center in the state of Louisiana that serves exclusively homeless children. We are licensed for 39 kids. But we also know that it's important to educate the mom and the dad. So we have a program that's called Working to Learn. So for those parents who have not yet earned their GED or their HISET. We have a full-time staff that will take you through all the coursework so that you can earn your high school diploma. What I'm most proud of is last year we fostered a deal with Northwest LTC, and our residents are now dually enrolled. And so while you're working on your GED, you're also enrolled in this community college where you can earn up to 6 credit hours for free, and then they're eligible for Pell Grants. So everything we do starts with love, and we know that education makes the difference. We do a lot of case management, case management meaning if you're in the shelter or in our apartment, we take those supportive services to our clients. That is life skills training. That is, if they have addictions, we make sure that we partner with CADA and other agencies. Because it's one thing, I think Pastor Larry said it best, when you leave Providence House, the biggest difference is you walk into permanent housing. Right. That's the end piece that a lot of nonprofits and homeless shelters don't do. And so once you leave our shelter, you're walking into one of our 40 apartments, which is fully subsidized by HUD. And so they live in those apartments, can live up there in those apartments for 2 years. The rent is paid by HUD, and that allows them the chance to get on their feet. They have to have a job, and they can get on their feet. And when they finish, that lease is in their name, and they begin to live in what we call mainstream society. And so we don't want them to come back. And so we realize that all of the education, supportive services have to be done on the front end. But what I want every listener to understand, homeless people are no different than those of us who are sitting around this table. They want the best for their children. I think the biggest difference, we have a safety net, and more often than not, they don't have a safety net. And so all of these community resources that we are talking about, we become the safety net. And so we have to partner together. We have to pull resources together in order to serve this growing population of poor people and homeless people.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how many organizations there are here in town, and I learned just about just three or four of them in the last week that I was totally unaware how much of that is done, and it's really managed by volunteers and community support, which is just essential, and it's really wonderful the community that we live in, that there is so much support. At the same time, I know that there are probably more people out who could support in many ways, whether it be financially, with donations, with their time. And I think just getting the word out, because I think the organizations do a great job, but I think some of the organization, they don't do enough to promote their work out in the community so people know what they're doing. I think that they're focusing more on the work and less on promotion, which is a good thing, but I think that hopefully this evening we've promoted some of these groups, and there are other groups that weren't represented on the show this evening, and I don't want to minimize the impact that they make either. One in particular I went to was Common Ground a couple mm-hmm. weeks ago, and served some meals and got a chance to see their facility, and had no idea they were even there. So anyway, that's a shout out to Common Ground. But anyway, this is a very important issue. I encourage listeners to get involved, to get informed, and really support these efforts here in town. I want to thank each and every one of you for being here and promoting your organization and for the work that you do. And I know we haven't really addressed but a fraction of all the things that you do in this limited period of time, but nevertheless, it's been my pleasure to have you.
And thank you.
Yes, we did not forget that you were there, Ellen White from Interfaith.
Oh, I know.
thank you. yes, thank you, and I want to thank Krista Pazoglia for calling in, Dr. Dennis Wessing, Assistant Dean at LSU School of Allied Health and past president of the MLK Health Center. Bernie Howard, Executive Director of Providence House in Shreveport, and Pastor Larry Otwell, Executive Director of the Shreveport Bossier Rescue Mission. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us. Thank you so much.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. Consult your physician or healthcare provider for all health concerns. Views and opinions expressed on Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Durlis, Al Villarreal, and Tim Snell. Production of Health Matters is made possible in part by the Newell Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and also by a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for listening this evening. We will now join the 19th Annual Homelessness Marathon at the end of this broadcast.